Hortense Daman Clues, Reel 7.
Now, Father, I didn't know that till after the war, but apparently my father was taken to the man's, what we call the little prison, in the Theresia Street. I've already said there's the main prison of the big prison in behind our house on the boulevard, and then there's also the little prison, which was supposed to be for life sentences for women and up to 25 years for men. So that was called little prison. We were taken there, but from then on that was the last time I saw Father in the Palais de Justice. So I didn't know. He was taken there, and from there he was taken to Braendonk, and from Braendonk he was taken to Buchenwald. Where after the war my father was liberated. Though they say Buchenwald was self-liberated, the Americans were the first to enter. And with the Americans was my brother. And that is unique, because that's on film, on war correspondence, where my brother meets up with my father in Dornwald. Mom, I didn't know anything about my mom then. I was taken to the little prison as well, and it was still dark. And that was the first time ever I went inside the prison. And that is a horrible feeling. The old Victorian prisons the center line and the wings in five, like a five-star wing, leading office. The women's part was before you entered, it was inside the prison, but it was before you entered into the man's part. That was from the wardens, were nuns. That's in hospitals, also nuns. The sisters of the wards are nuns. So that's part of the, I think it's altered now. But in any case, they lived in the prison and they devoted all their life in the prison, these sisters. And there was we were lucky, really. If we could have stayed there for the rest of the war, we would have been all right. Because once they got to know, they let me have contact very quietly later on with my mother, you see, who was in another cell. So that was very helpful, because we always knew what interrogation was, and that, you know, that gave you a sort of a little bit of reaction to build on when you went for an interview. But when I first came and I heard the noise of the sound of those big keys turning in and the slamming of those cast iron gates, horrific. And every footstep, every little bit of noise you make, echoes round and round. Four or five times in a prison. And they took me in the man's wing, this particular wing, because it's three floors high. And everything was very quiet, and they stood still. There wasn't a sound. And then all of a sudden, this horrific, in the middle of this thing, two Gestapos on each side of me, some behind me. And then it there was empty cane. My head was pulled back on me because I heard it sound up the top floor. And he brought a man out of the cell. Well, I knew it was Gaston, but you couldn't really recognise him. The blood was dripping on the floor in front of me. From they were beating me, even when they were holding his head over the balustrade. All he said was, have a good look, you terrorists. He says, and that's what will happen to you if you don't tell us what we want to know. And then he took me to what I was to know for my home for three months. Been interrogated. Everybody else, they used to take in a van or something. Two different interrogation things, because there was a Gestapo headquarters as well, where the majority of people were interrogated. But no, we were interrogated in a private home, which was the headquarters of the German secret police, and they were the majority were colonels and so forth, and general of the German SS. Every day for about 30 days I was interrogated, marched there until one day I kept wondering why are they taking me all the time from the little prison. It wasn't very far, I admit it, but they didn't do it with anybody else, and march me on foot. And then it dawned on me, you see, because I saw somebody, one of the Gestapo, it happened to be just stepping in front of me at that particular moment, sort of made a sign upwards to the other side of the street. Excuse me. And I caught sight of that, and I saw an answer on the window upstairs, on one of the windows, and I realised then they were taking me as bait, hoping. I didn't know then that already something had happened, because these things, then I discovered the other side of it when I came back. And even my brother didn't tell me, somebody else told me about that incident. But I thought they're hoping that he will attack, you see. And fortunately, I suppose he wasn't really falling for that bait. Although he probably was desperate to do something. But what I did find out was that in desperation, he wrote a letter with all the names and address of all the highest that were in Louvain, the commandanteur and the whole lot, full name, full address, wife's name, the whole lot, put it all in the letter and threw a brick, with a brick wrapped around the brick, and threw that, and the brick landed exactly on his desk, threatening. If anything happened to his father, his mother, or his sister, that would be the reprisals he would take him. He was so frightened of me. And of course, he was on top list.
Well, what form were the interrogations taking, Hortense?
all the time where my brother was. What they knew from, that's what I found. They knew from what people had denounced, probably after breaking down and so forth. Because at one time there was 38 women all picked up, either for their husbands or so forth. And in the 79, you see, and one will say something, the other will say something. It would start. Excuse me. They would take me. I would stand in a corner, like as a child when you're punished, and you have to stand in a corner looking. The corner, right? That was a punishment that we were brought up with in school, but not for hours. We had to drink or anything, and then it would be the weather was beginning to get hot, so now you weren't allowed to turn around and you weren't having a drink. And I made one mistake once. But I did ask for water before, and I couldn't take it. But that particular, the second arrest, I asked if I could have a drink. And the Bail was one of our, well, the biggest Belgian traitor. He went out, and he fetched it. He came back. And of course, I had to drink it. Or he would have probably poured it over my eyes or something. I thought I drank it. Oh, I was so sick. There was more half of the glass with that full of salt. And he said, "Here, you're thirsty. You ask for a drink and drink it." And he stood there. I had two hits, pretty severe, because he was. In this dislocation as a boxer, that one did. So I thought, well, this will drink it. And that was it. I stood there all day, and then at night I was marched back. And except for that incident with this salt water, that was all there. But then another time, you see. It would start, where's your brother? I don't know. When was it last you saw him? I don't know. A long, long time. They called, you're lying, this, you that. So, there would be the brain. And there would be the head sitting behind the desk, Max Günther, who was a journalist. And he would start, and the others, his staff would come in with other questions, till I just had about enough. And I said, you're very rude. For then he came and screamed in my ear something. And I turned around and I said, you're a very rude man. I said, if you ask me a question, I said, I'll try to answer it. I said, all talking and shouting all together, I said, I'm not deaf. He got up. He picked up a chair or something. Well, I was sitting on one of those tabourets, which is around. Circle with no back, right, and with three legs. Sometimes it was very difficult to keep because they were only small. And on purpose, he was sitting in front of a desk about half a yard or so left. And in his temper, because I said that he was so dumb from me, He got up and he picked his chair up, and that's when the moment he broke my ribs, but I didn't know that till after the war. He broke this chair on my back. Called me all sorts of names. But as he did, you see, I went forwards. And I tried to save myself. You know, under that normal reaction. And of course, they acquired, shall I call it in a nice way, all these private houses when they entered Belgium. And all the furniture that they could get, and this was a magnificent desk, bureau, and green leather, I should say. Green leather on. Because he had, I suppose, he acquired as well the inkwell, which were in future and all worked out and very elaborate with the crystal pots. Red and blue and black, different. And as I went forwards, of course, I knocked all this, and all the ink, there was a lot of rainbow colours, all over his papers, all over the desk, I was covered here. Get out! Get her out of here. So, I didn't see them for a couple of days. I was taken back to prison. And, I didn't sleep much because I thought, oh, an arched pain. And I didn't know anything. I didn't know what. I thought it was just reaction from the beating. And, but I didn't really know that they had broken three ribs. And now, even now, you see, anything, if I get a cold or anything, it goes back to. To the weakest parts, you know, that's why that's wrong. Still, that's got nothing to do with it at all. But, then they brought my mother, the nuns, came one day and said, you must promise me. You won't cry and be quiet, because they had already moved the prisoners that were in their life. They actually.
The criminals?
Yes. They moved them up, you see, and they made it so that we had the Crown Court. And the first floor, so all the others were moved up to the top. But whenever they came, the nuns at a certain time, when they got to know us, used to come and open very quietly the doors of the cells, and after the interrogation, and they let you talk. Well, of course you had to be very quiet because they put stool pigeons. They put it twice. They put two in my cell. I drove her out. She only lasted about three hours, and the other one lasted a bit longer, about 12 hours. And then she wanted to be out because apparently I drove them nearly mad. I knew. I could tell there was something wrong about them. And that was another thing. And then, she took me to cell 13, I shall never forget it. And that was the first I knew that my mother was there as well, you see. I didn't know my mother was arrested. My mother was arrested a few hours after us. She came back for my mother. Cause my mother's face, her cheek was about how long would you say that?
About 3.5 inches.
Yeah. I was all open. Oh, half an inch open. I had a scar. Yeah. I've never seen so many different colours, textures of colours on anybody's eyes as there was on my mother's eyes. The reaction. Now, my temper. I would have been foolish. I would have done something foolish if they would have been there. You see, not being able to control. In any case, she told me what had happened and so forth, and that who had talked, you see. Because then her interrogation was, as well. So, you know, I mean, there's some people that avoid you. Well, they avoid you because they know full well that you know. What's the point? The interviews, you see, they would be interviewed and they would be put in a room. They wouldn't always be on their own, but if they had the opportunity, it would go round what had happened, who did see, especially if they knew. And it always came back. So and so said, yes, they slept once at home. And then another one said, yes, twice. And then, of course, it went on and on. So it started a chain, an unending chain. That was unfortunate. So every time I went, I told Mum what had happened at night. And of course she was, but we had each other. Father was already suffering in brain dump, which we didn't know. And he made it on his own, so there must have been something somewhere, the bond between the family.
Did you find during your interrogations, were you sort of developing a way of answering, of handling it?
Oh yes. That was perhaps now I call it a gift, which you don't discover till it's pointed out to you. I found that I used to speak very good German, and they always were amazed, you see. And I used to be very polite, no matter how they shouted. At certain points, I would tell them what I thought about them. And then, you know, they were sort of, it was the Belgian Gestapo who were the worst. Not that the German Gestapo did me any favours, by no means, because this is when people say, oh, you were so young. And I always think to myself, well, the Germans didn't give me any preferences because of my age. They treated me, if not first, as some adults. But I found that I could get around them, could get away with them. I was always extremely polite. I kept that up due to how you've been brought up, and to say yes, thank you, and so forth. Being brought up in a shop as well. And I had a very good sense of being able to weigh, after a very short time, people's character a little bit. That helped me during the war an awful lot. Because when I was stopped, and going back now, when I was stopped with a basket, all of a sudden the cord in the street off. You can't run anywhere or you get shot. Well, there were people that run, try and risk it. You were near another street or whatever. Yeah. Women one side, men the other. And I was there with a basket with 24 hand grenades. Extremely heavy. I was, well, my bag was my treasure. And I had very often bets with the men, but nobody could beat me on the bike. I don't know. He just entered, didn't I? He hadn't got much time, because when they called in the street, already was shouting and doing and shooting in the air and beating and everything had to go on the table. And I also, it's in a narrow street. And it was a main street where you had to consider, on the right hand side of the, we had the tram lines. And it was treacherous if it came, if your bicycle wheels came in those. So you had to really know. And I had this, not in a pannier like it was in the book, on the top of my steering wheel, because I was more in control. It was just one of those things. They're heavier sometimes, but with it being compact, I could control it better and I could drive better. But with a case like that, with the road sloping where the trams are, and then you have rather a steep the entry is to go into the gutter, what you call, or I wouldn't, with that weight, I wouldn't have been able to come out of it safe. Well, on top, they had put two layers of eggs, normal eggs, and it was covered with the old fashioned mug. I had a special pass, because by then, during the war, I used to go and do the market. Go early hours of the market, and I used to go and get for the people that were, everybody had to register in a shop. So you had so many customers, now I forgot now, households, you see, and you were registered in this particular shop, and that's where you have to go with your ration card. So you also had this special a pass to go to the early markets and buy. Well, not by, you have to be allocated. That was another thing I had to learn very young, to compete with the old crafty, what you call them, those that did the market, early hours market. And there are some rough ones there. And I was always coming home crying, without any, all this rotten stuff. They palmed me off.
But this day with the grenades, what happened then? How did you get out of that?
These soldiers with the rifles, I have to go. I said, I can't go there. You put it back. I said, I've been to my, and I saw quite a good distance away, and I shouted on top of my head. I said, Major, may I have a word with you? By then, I had discovered, I used to know every rank, which is something I forgot now, and I always used to promote them, as I was addressing them, depending what I thought. Sometimes I hunt them up two rows higher up. No, not one ever said to me, you're wrong. They were always very impressed and they lapped it up. And this soldier was putting his rifle in the back. And he said, come on, see. So I walked up there. And it's no use saying I made this up before, because you can't make these things up before. He said, what? I said, oh, Emilio, I said, you have to excuse me. I said, but I have been to the market. I said, there's eggs in there. I said, here's my pass. And he looked rather greedily because they were very rare, you see, when he opened the cloth. But that was to come. I said, and I got a boyfriend and I've been talking to a boyfriend. I said, and I'm late. I said, and my mother would want to know where I've been. I said, would you like to? Would you like to? He said, yeah, Oliver. And I gave him 2 eggs. And he says, go on your way. I don't know how I made the other 500 yards round the corner. And I had to come off. And I had to stand there and I couldn't stop shaking. Could not stop shaking. So that little voice tells you inside, now come on, Artas, pull yourself together. You know.